Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It's Friday, February 18th, 2022. Today, as we do each week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me with his reporting and editorial analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
Now, PEN America, which advocates for free speech in the U.S. and worldwide, has issued a report, Andrew, showing a steep rise in organized political efforts to gag schools and remove books from schools and library shelves.
Yeah, and the numbers really are pretty alarming. So far this year in 2022, and we're only 6 weeks in, 103 different bills have been introduced in state legislatures across the country, which PEN officials say represents a national assault on our education system, censoring both what teachers can say and what students may learn. And all of this comes as we're seeing a dramatic increase in challenged books at local school and library boards. And this is a key moment for our nation and specifically for the publishing industry. And this week, it looks like the industry is starting to step up with statements from various publishers, from various Big Five publishers, I should say, and some donations starting to come in, all with designs on pushing back against these sort of dangerous, un-American efforts to stifle free speech.
Indeed, Penguin Random House CEO Marcus Doley has pledged $500,000 to PEN America to be used to combat threats of book bans and educational gag orders.
Yeah, very much appreciated, I'm sure. Penguin Random House CEO Marcus Doley is stepping up. Other houses, too, are contributing funds to the cause. You know, better late than never. I think we probably needed to see this starting to happen towards the end of last year or in the fall of last year. And in some cases, though, I have to say maybe it's right on time because we're drawing closer to the midterm elections. And this is when we're really going to need the support, really going to need the funding if we're going to make a difference. You know, in a statement, Marcus Doley explained his commitment to free speech, which he says was galvanized by his background growing up in post-war Germany. But, you know, you don't have to have grown up in post-war Germany to recognize the threat right here, right now in the United States. Now, as I've said in previous podcasts, the question is not, are we going to get enough money here, right? Because it's not hard to fundraise on the issue of free speech. But I think the key question is, how are we going to spend this money? What are we going to use this money for? This is really going to be the important thing here, is how publishers and their allies are going to fight this pernicious wave of book bannings and educational gag orders. And the simple answer is, we have to fight this like the political battle that it is. You know, this old, you know, let's release a statement game, that's just not going to get it done here. Now, we're up against some very well-organized efforts to ban books and gag teachers, well-funded, and it's a national strategy sort of to sow anger and activate conservative voters. So it very much is a political campaign. And if we're going to be successful in turning this back, it needs to be treated like a political campaign from our side as well. And I think this is where the money is going to start helping. There's some good news to report here, because this week we're starting to see evidence that supporters of free speech are joining these political battles with some very effective TV ads. And I will remind our listeners that for all the headlines and all the new bills out there that are seeking to ban books and restrict speech, as loud as it all may seem, this is a minority opinion, right? Most Americans, I think, understand the importance of free speech and see the danger in these censorship efforts when they're forced to confront them. And I'm starting to see some TV ads now, especially in states like Florida, that are really sort of hitting the mark. So what we also need to do is show up at the ballot boxes, stand for local office, all these things that you would do in a normal course of a political movement. So, you know, disturbing news that these kinds of censorship efforts are on the rise. But good news, I think, that people, including publishers, appear to be stepping into the fray in a meaningful way, and that there appears to be a realization that we really do need to fight this battle, if I can borrow a phrase from Every Library's John Kraska, like the political campaign that it is.
In an unusually swift decision, a federal court on Wednesday evening, Andrew, granted the motion by the American Association of Publishers for a preliminary injunction blocking Maryland officials from enforcing their state's new library ebook law. And as I recall from our conversation last week, this is an outcome you're probably not very surprised by.
Yeah, no, I'm not really surprised at all. As our listeners will recall from last week, my read was that the AAP really had gotten the better of the oral argument, and that the judge in the case, a recent Biden appointee named Deborah L. Boardman, appeared very much predisposed to the AAP's copyright argument. And sure enough, in granting the injunction, Judge Boardman really went all in for the AAP. In enjoining the law, Boardman held that it is clear that the Maryland Act, and I'll quote her here, stands as an obstacle to the accomplishment and purposes and objectives of the Copyright Act. And while the judge noted that the Maryland Act only requires an offer to license and doesn't explicitly require publishers to grant licenses to libraries, she called that a distinction without a difference, a phrase that she's repeating verbatim, not quoting, but actually repeating in her own words, that comes directly from the AAP brief. And she holds that the threat of civil and criminal penalties for noncompliance with the Maryland ebook law basically amounts to a forced transaction that would effectively strip publishers of their exclusive right to distribute.
A preliminary injunction is regarded as quite an extraordinary remedy. And last week, your only question here was whether or not AAP had cleared that high bar.
Yes, and I think that was really the only sort of fairly mild surprise here. In enjoining the law, Boardman found that the AAP cleared all four factors necessary to grant the injunction. And I'll remind our listeners here of what those are, that they're a likelihood of success on the merits, a showing of irreparable harm, winning the balance of equities, and that the injunction granted would be in the public interest. And for me, the sort of mild surprise here came in Boardman's analysis of irreparable harm, which I thought was a little bit shaky, you know, and I'll try to explain why. You know, first off, the AAP had argued that since it was likely to win on its copyright argument, that the constitutional injury there from having its exclusive rights trampled on, well, that was enough to establish irreparable harm. But curiously, Boardman in her decision said she found that argument, and I'll quote her, unpersuasive. Instead, she said that it would be impossible to quantify damages should the law be allowed to stand and struck down later, and that qualified here as irreparable harm. And I have to say that that analysis is, you know, very much based on what I think is a shaky understanding of the library ebook market, the library market in general, I should say. Look, you know, simply put, libraries have fixed collections budgets, right? Whether it goes to print or digital books, 100% of that money is going to go to AAP members every year, right? For the book budget anyway. And the fact is, library ebooks are more profitable than library print books. A print book that sits on a library shelf for 2 years and circulates will cost a library $25 to $30. An ebook will get you $65, and it expires in 2 years, so you got to rebuy it again. So what's the difference if a patron reads a print book or a digital book, right? You know, you're getting more for the book if it's an ebook. Now, the AAP is going to suggest that each library ebook represents a lost consumer ebook sale. But I'm not sure that that argument holds water in the print world, and I'm not sure it holds water in the ebook world too. The fact is, you know, for a bill that the state of Maryland says was a consumer protection bill, my observation is that the Maryland state attorneys did a terrible job of explaining the economics of the library ebook market, and it really came back to hurt them here. The damages question, I have to say, is not some Gordian knot, right? You could go back and figure this out. Furthermore, since the law hasn't even been invoked yet, you know, we don't know what the state would have regarded to be reasonable or unreasonable terms. And it is highly likely that the terms that are currently in use by publishers would be held to be legally reasonable, even if librarians challenge them. Indeed, librarians in the state have said as much. They've said in statements that they do not plan to challenge current library ebook terms. But, you know, none of that was argued, and none of that was put into the record. Virtually none of the argument was about the situation in the library ebook market. In fact, in her decision, Boardman had this little section where she just basically noted that the two sides dispute the state of the library book market. AAP says it's great, and libraries say it's not great. And, you know, she says, well, there's this dispute. But let me tell you, if that's the view that's going to hold here, if that's what's going to control this case, the state has no chance of success. If they're going to have any chance of success here, they needed to show that there were problems in the market. They didn't do that. But look, while the court entertained and largely accepted the AAP's arguments on each factor for the preliminary injunction, the fact is that this decision ultimately all came down to one simple fact, which I think the AAP argued extremely effectively, and that is that the Maryland law is fatally flawed simply because it runs afoul of copyright law. Game, set, and match. And you remember I had opined that this case might really be that simple. And in the end, it really was. Only Congress can regulate copyrights, the court held. And while the state says that this law is a regulation of unfair trade practices, it runs afoul of copyright. And that's the ballgame.
So what happens now? Does this mean game over for the Maryland law and others like it?
So the law is enjoined, but the legal case in Maryland continues. And as for how the state will fight this legal battle going forward, we'll have to see. We did have a statement from Maryland Attorney General Brian Frosch, who said he would continue to fight for libraries in the state. But what that means for this particular suit, we'll have to see. As I mentioned at one point, the state has a motion to dismiss. It could challenge the AP standing there too. So there's a couple of legal avenues there. But look, legally speaking, let's not sugarcoat it. This decision to issue a preliminary injunction is a decisive blow. I'll go back to a point that AAP lawyer Scott Zebrak made during oral arguments. Basically, whatever the market reality, whatever's happening in the library ebook market, whatever prices or terms exist, whatever inequity or unfairness there may be, it just doesn't matter because this state law is preempted by copyright law. And in granting the injunction, that's what Boardman held. She said that libraries face unique challenges. She conceded that as we start to transition to digital. But striking the balance between the critical functions of libraries, and I'm quoting her here, and the importance of preserving the exclusive rights of copyright holders is squarely the province of Congress and not for the court or for a state legislature. And if you think that sounds pretty airtight, I do too. Now, could an appeals court reverse that someday? Sure, it could get litigated through and then up to an appeals court. Maybe that would happen. Hey, we've seen it happen before, right? In the Ticini case and in the Kurtzain case, two big copyright cases that were overturned at the Supreme Court. But for now, legally speaking, this is a thorough victory for the AAP and a vindication of their copyright position. However, I would remind listeners that while this has been litigated as a copyright case and the copyright question has been addressed here, that this law in Maryland isn't really about copyright at its heart. It's about libraries. People like their libraries, and so I expect that this matter is probably far from closed.
And so you think this question of ebook lending in public libraries won't go away for that reason?
Sure, exactly. And I guess what I'd point out is that despite the AAP's characterization that the library ebook market is gangbusters and is doing just fine, that's not the view on the ground, right? Consumers complain about extra long waits for ebooks versus print books in libraries. Librarians complain about what it's doing to their budgets and their ability to collect. And librarians have been engaged on this issue for over a decade, right? Lawmakers in Maryland and New York passed their laws unanimously. And now similar laws are pending in 5 states. And already those states have begun revising the language of their laws to get around the copyright issue here. So ultimately, this was never really a case just about some academic copyright issue. There was the clear intent of this law was to protect libraries. And it's a pretty popular cause. And at some point, it's, the more states that start to consider this law, it's going to start to attract the attention of Congress too. But, personally, I just have to say my own piece here. I'm not speaking for my employer, Publishers Weekly. I hope not. Let's stop the madness already, right? For publishers and librarians, there is no reason not to settle this issue in the boardroom, not to come to a business understanding. If anything, I think this legal battle has served as a stark reminder to publishers that librarians are not going away on this issue, that they plan to remain engaged, and that they have a lot of popular support. And my hope would be the publishers see that there is more to gain from working with libraries in the digital realm than litigating. Maybe I'm wrong. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one.
All right. Well, Andrew Albanese channeling John Lennon, thanks so much for joining me on the program today.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, what's the lucky number for Springer Nature's SDG publishing program? The answer is 17 for 17 content hubs covering all 17 United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. The 17 SDG content hubs bring together multidisciplinary peer-reviewed research from across Springer Nature's output of journals and books, including its flagship publication, Nature. The effort aims to connect policy and business professionals with the research that can provide information and evidence they need to resolve development challenges, from eliminating poverty and hunger to delivering quality education and economic growth. Nicola Jones is head of publishing for the Springer Nature SDG program.
We are just trying to make as many connections as we can, because, I mean, it's kind of said there in SDG 17, Partnerships for the Goals, that it's only through individuals and organizations and nation states working together that we can address these challenges. You can't have an individual country reach all of the targets associated with the SDGs and then just kind of be done. That's no good. Everybody has to get there.
SDG Content Hub magic number is 17, coming on the next CCC podcast. Our producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts, and please do follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.